Vice President Harris leaves on Sunday for her first diplomatic trip since taking office.
On her agenda, immigration and vaccine diplomacy. How will she navigate these conversations with leaders in Guatemala and Mexico?
I'm Steve Inskeep with Noel King, and this is Up First from NPR News. More than 15 million Americans are out of work, but employers are still struggling to hire. An economist blames a tight labor market.
Definitely the demand is exceeding the supply.
So what's this say about the state of the country's economic recovery?
And Postmaster General Louis DeJoy is under federal investigation. The allegations are about campaign finance violations back when he ran a private business. What could this mean for his leadership of the Postal Service? Stick with us. We got the news you need to start your day.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo explains the importance of creating a safe space for therapy.
I can't tell you how many times I've had clients that say that expression, like, I've never told that to anybody. That's when I know I've made some kind of momentous move with this person. They feel safe enough to expose that part of themselves, and doing that together with somebody else can be very powerful.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/upfirst.
Vice President Kamala Harris will go to Guatemala on Sunday, and then she's on to Mexico.
It's her first diplomatic trip while in office. President Biden sent her. His administration is under pressure to do something about large numbers of migrants who've been arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border every month. The vice president will also discuss the White House plan to ship COVID-19 vaccines to Central America.
NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith will be traveling with the vice president. Good morning, Tam.
Good morning.
Let's talk about vaccines, vaccine diplomacy, they're calling it. What news is she bringing?
The Biden administration has taken a lot of criticism thus far for not sharing a lot of vaccines fast enough while they focused on vaccinating Americans. So the big news is that they're starting to send vaccines out into the world. The White House yesterday announced its plans for shipping doses, and a portion of those will go to Mexico and Guatemala, other Central American countries, as well as countries in Asia and Africa. It is a big push, but there will be more to come. This is not nearly enough, not even close. They're talking about shipping millions of doses. Experts say there need to be billions of doses shipped out. But Harris will be able to talk about the White House strategy for boosting global vaccine supplies. President Biden is going next week to Europe and will be talking about this a lot on his first foreign trip. He wants to galvanize the world's leading economies to get behind a push to end the global pandemic by sharing and producing more vaccines.
So the news on vaccines will probably be well received. She also has another assignment on a problem that goes back much longer and is more entrenched, which is immigration. What has she been tasked with doing on this trip?
So if you look at polling, this is a big red flag for President Biden. A lot of people don't approve of the job he's doing when it comes to immigration because of these large numbers of people, largely from Central America, trying to come to the U.S. through the Mexican border. Biden asked Harris to take this on, though not all of it. Right from the start, the White House tried to draw a distinction between border issues, which are not part of her portfolio, and addressing the root causes of this migration, which is. So Harris is focusing on the major challenges that are pushing people to make that perilous journey, which she says will not be fixed overnight.
We have the capacity to give people hope. And hope in particular in this case, that if they stay, that help is on the way.
So she's been working to direct some aid to the countries and encouraging businesses to invest there. On the trip, she'll meet with President Alejandro Jamate of Guatemala and Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador. But she's also going to be talking to community leaders, entrepreneurs, and labor groups.
You know, this is a portfolio. You know well that this is a portfolio that Biden had when he was vice president. What has she learned from him, possibly? What's going to be different this time around?
And that is the big question hanging over this trip and this high-profile job. And it's something her Republican critics have keyed in on. Harris aides are aware of the challenges, and they're signaling it will take time. Mazen Al-Fakih is a senior advisor to Harris.
We are taking a very critical eye at the programs that have and have not been successful and looking to scale up ones that have been. We're also looking to broaden partnerships, understanding that the U.S. government and foreign assistance alone cannot tackle this problem.
Experts I talked to said that Harris needs willing partners in these countries, and that's hard when corruption has been a longtime issue. So that corruption conversation is going to be a big part of what she's talking about on this trip.
NPR's Tamara Keith. Thanks, Tam, and have a safe trip.
You're welcome.
U.S. employers added 559,000 jobs last month. That's an improvement over April. And yet millions of people are out of work, and employers say they are finding it hard to find workers. NPR's chief economics correspondent, Scott Horsley, is here to update us on the numbers. Hey, Scott.
Good morning, Noelle.
So this is an improvement over April. It is still a slower pace of job growth than we saw in March. Where is hiring happening?
We're seeing a lot of hiring where you would expect as businesses reopen and more vaccinated Americans venture out. Bars and restaurants added 186,000 jobs last month. Amusement parks and recreation centers added another 58,000. We know there's a lot of demand in those industries. An index of service sector activity that came out yesterday showed business growing at a record pace. Anthony Nieves, who compiles that index for the Institute for Supply Management, characterizes the picture this way.
The pent-up demand is real. I think it's almost like a jailbreak. People are looking to get out and do things, and definitely the demand is exceeding the supply.
So you'd expect that to translate to a lot of hiring, but you also saw job cuts in some areas. Construction lost about 20,000 jobs last month. Retail showed some small job losses. The industries that are growing probably would have hired even more people if they had more applicants. Some employers report paying a $50 bonus just to show up for an interview.
Just to show up for an interview. Okay, so why, if millions of people are unemployed, why are employers having so much trouble finding people to come to work?
And that's the paradox. A number of explanations have been offered. Some workers are wary of taking jobs for health reasons, especially if they or someone in their family is not yet vaccinated. Some people might be busy caring for children who are not attending in-person school right now. And then a third factor that some businesses point to are the enhanced unemployment benefits that the federal government's been paying, including the extra $300 a week. Those benefits could make a job less attractive, especially in a low-wage industry like restaurants or hotels. And that's why we have now half the states, all with Republican governors, saying they're going to end those benefits ahead of schedule this summer, in some cases as early as next week. Most of those states announced that move after that disappointing jobs report for April.
Where does the unemployment rate stand now?
Unemployment dipped to 5.8% in May from 6.1% the month before. That's partly because people found jobs, but it also reflects some people dropping out of the job market altogether. And that's the last thing you want to see when employers are beating the bushes for more help. It's interesting. We saw more women coming into the workforce last month while more men were leaving the workforce. That's the opposite of what we saw in April. What we'd like to see is more men and women coming off the sidelines, and that's what we'll be watching for in the months ahead.
NPR Chief Economics Correspondent Scott Horsley. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
The head of the post office is under federal investigation.
A probe centered on alleged campaign finance violations, which date back to when Postmaster General Louis DeJoy ran a private business. The Washington Post first reported these contributions some time back. DeJoy was a major Republican fundraiser before he was appointed to run the post office last year during the Trump administration. President Biden and a lot of Democrats want him out of the Postmaster General's job, but they cannot fire him because DeJoy can only be removed by the USPS Board of Governors.
Jacob Bogage covers the Postal Service for the Washington Post. He's been reporting this one out. Hi, Jacob.
Hey, good morning.
Let's get some more specifics here. What is Louis DeJoy alleged to have done?
Yeah, what we're talking about is something called a straw donor scheme. It's the campaign finance equivalent of asking your older brother to go to the liquor store to buy you a six-pack because you're underage. What he's alleged to have done is to ask employees from his former company, New Breed Logistics, to make donations to his favored causes and candidates, very frequently Republicans, and then he would make them whole through bonuses or through pay raises. It is bright red, first page of the rule book thing you should not do in campaign finance law.
And have the employees said, we felt pressure to do this, and so we did it even though we didn't want to?
Yeah, I mean, when Louis DeJoy was appointed the Postmaster General about a year ago now, as any journalist would do, you start making calls to former employees to get a sense of what it was like to work for him and what his leadership style is like. And within 10 minutes of being on the phone with former employees, they would say this was part of the culture at New Breed, and they would offer it up kind of unprompted. And when my colleagues have reached out to former employees, including folks who had access to payroll records and ran the HR department, they would say, this is something we were asked to do routinely.
What is Louis DeJoy saying in his own defense, if anything?
He's saying he's never knowingly violated campaign finance law, and that he'd cooperate with the Department of Justice investigation. He also points to previous inquiries by the Department of Inspector General for the Postal Service, in which they've cleared him of any wrongdoing, but those were about different issues entirely.
Okay, so as Steve mentioned, President Biden and a lot of Democrats would like him to be out of this position, but they can't fire him. Congress, in the meantime, is considering a bill with bipartisan support to cut some costs at the post office, which he leads. Remind us again why that is.
Yeah, we're all sending less mail. The Postal Service generally doesn't get taxpayer funds to run its operations. It runs itself on the sale of postage products. And we are all sending a whole lot less mail now than we did, say, 10 years ago. That has led to a real budget crunch. And so there are some entrenched costs that folks in Congress want to take care of, but it's still not going to fix this bill, the major problems the Postal Service has, which is we all just send less mail.
So things are a little messy anyway, and then you add in this investigation, and what does it all mean?
That's what we're trying to find out. It can definitely damage the Postal Service's long-term reputation, if nothing else. This is an agency that lives on its reputation and its ability to attract customers. And if the leader is somehow embarrassed or damaged, is that going to impact the way customers and lawmakers see its reform efforts? We don't know.
Jacob Bogage of The Washington Post. Thanks so much, Jacob. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that's Up First for Friday, June 4th. I'm Noel King.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Up First is produced by Jeevika Verma. Our editors are Kelly Dickens, Jacob Conrad, Scott Salloway, and Simone Popperell. Our music is composed by Nick Dupre and Louis Weeks. And the news doesn't stop when the podcast ends, so follow us on Twitter at Up First.
As you likely know, Up First airs on Saturday, too. We'd love it if you start your weekend with us tomorrow. Lulu Garcia-Navarro and Scott Simon will be on deck. That'll be in this feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
On NPR's Rough Translation,
there's just fewer people that know somebody that's in the military.
After 20 years of war, are civilians and military farther apart than ever?
They were asking me, do you want to hear this? Do you want to know us?
Listen to Homefront, the new season of Rough Translation.